Okay, good morning, everyone. It's roughly 9 o'clock, 9:01, and I call this meeting of the Oregon Government Ethics Commission to order. The first item is comments from the chair, which my predecessor, Commissioner Keene, added. I think it was an excellent idea, and I don't have a lot of comments. I guess I have two. The first one I have is to note that this is my first meeting as the presiding officer, so I hope that all will forgive me if I make some early mistakes. I'm happy to be corrected, and so I'll go through the meeting as correctly and as efficiently as I can. The second one is about something that I'd like to encourage all of the commissioners to do. And we know that our commission does an excellent job, you know, our staff does an excellent job of providing education to public officials and lobbyists. Last year at a conference I held, Haley Whedon, as a trainer, also provided training to political activists, and it occurred to me that we can help to weave a fabric of a culture that supports ethics laws if we let more people know who are not public officials, who are not lobbyists. And I know that some folks on this commission are members of service clubs or other organizations, and I'm going to encourage all of you, as I'm going to do, to make non-traditional audiences aware of the Oregon Government Ethics Commission and the various services that they provide and what their function is, so that we can engage more people, more local organizations, and help to build a culture which promotes compliance with ethics laws. So that is my two cents. And with that, we'll go to approval of the minutes of the December 14th, 2018 commission meeting. Are there any corrections to the minutes?
I'm fine. I move we approve the minutes as published.
Okay, thank you very much. A motion is not necessary, but I'm grateful for it anyway, for the endorsement of our minutes. And so unless there is an objection, we will approve the minutes. Seeing no objection, minutes are approved. Next on the agenda is the consent calendar. There are three items on the consent calendar. It's the smallest and shortest consent calendar I have ever seen. Does anyone want to take anything off the consent calendar? Okay. If not, I'll entertain a motion to adopt the consent calendar. Okay. Commissioner Sugar moves to adopt the consent calendar. Without objection, I believe we can go to this is a voice vote for this? Yes. Okay. Please do a voice vote.
Commissioner Starr?
I think
it's not a voice vote.
All in favor.
Can we do that for this?
Mm-hmm. All
okay.
In favor.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. Consent calendar is adopted. Next, we go to stipulated final orders. Agenda item number 6, relating to Gary Clark, Councilor, City of Sumter. Staff report, please.
Commissioner Burke, Chair Burke, Commissioners, Gary Clark was a City Council member for the City of Sumter in Baker County. In January 2016, the City Council noticed an executive session under ORS 192.660.2 subsection H for the purpose of interviewing outside counsel. Such an interview is not an authorized topic for executive session under that subsection, which permits executive session to confer with legal counsel concerning pending or anticipated litigation. In September 2016, the Commission made preliminary findings of violation by the Mayor and the City Council members, including Mr. Clark. The stipulated order in your meeting books is the final one in this case of all of them. It authorizes a letter of education in lieu of civil penalty, and the letter of education is the same as the one that was sent to the other City Council members.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there any discussion or are there any questions relating to item number 6? Commissioner Sugar.
Thank you. I would just, and maybe I missed something in the packet, but in situations like this, because it's been a while since we maybe reviewed the underlying materials for these stipulated orders, it would be helpful, I think, to have some of the background, not just the stipulated final orders, in the packet. So that's just it. I don't have any problem with where we're headed with this one, but if there were one that had more complicated facts, mm-hmm. I would want a little bit of background.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know when I was reviewing this what the rest of the story was.
Okay. Is that all right? Does staff have no problem?
Yeah, and I probably should have given a heads up to begin with that Susan drew the short straw, and she is going back and looking at our pending cases and really trying to clean them up. And so I think she was trying to indicate that at the time, everybody in the city had agreed to the settlement but Mr. Clark. So kind of got left out there, and we got busy out there, so she's trying to come back. So we can definitely do that and try to catch up, because we did the same thing. I mean, she came in my office and catching me up, trying to remember what this was about.
Right.
So I think it's only fair to bring it in here. But there may be a couple others in here, too. So I'll just warn you, but if you have questions about it, we can certainly get the file and answer for you at this time, if they're more complex. But this was an executive session where I believe that they moved away or something, and we couldn't get a hold of them, but now we found them and have got them to sign. So
the only other question, thank you. The only other question that I have is the date is confusing to me on the signature line.
Yes, it confused me as well. Mr. Clark, I think, was reluctant and somewhat angry when he signed this. And so my understanding is that when it came in, part of the delay in bringing this to the commission was the former investigator may have spent time trying to contact him to get him to clarify or correct the date, and was unable to do so. But the date on this was in 2018 because it matched the date on the envelope.
Okay. So it should be an 18, not an 8?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions?
We could put a copy of that envelope attached to this order for our files, mm-hmm. too. Just
might be a good idea.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Okay, no problem. If there are no other questions or comments, I believe we go to a vote on this. I think this is a roll call vote. So please proceed.
I'll move
okay.
to accept the stipulated final order.
Okay.
On item number 6.
It's been so moved. And second?
Don't need a second.
Don't need a second? All right. Very well. Go forward with the voting, please.
Commissioner Sosa.
Aye.
Commissioner Starr.
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards.
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum.
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sugar?
Aye.
Chair Burr?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay. Next item on the agenda, number 7, Patrick Christopher Perry, Wheeler County Judge and Chairperson of the Wheeler County Court.
Chair Burr, Commissioners, Chris Perry is the former judge of the County Court for Wheeler County. The complaint in this matter alleged ethics violations, including that Judge Perry was involved in awarding a contract to a company that employs his brother, that Judge Perry improperly awarded a raise to a county employee, and that Judge Perry was residing with a young female employee that he supervised. In August 2016, the commission opened an investigation, but it was suspended for criminal investigation. When it reopened, our investigation indicated that Judge Perry was not involved in awarding the contract to the company that employed his brother, but he did sign the check without ever disclosing his conflict of interest. With regard to the employee raise, the investigation indicates that the raise was not authorized by the county court, but at that time, Judge Perry then said he would pay for it out of his own salary. He then directed the employee to process the raise, but failed to direct the employee to withdraw the monies from the judge's salary. Finally, with regard to the nepotism allegation, information is insufficient to determine that the employee resided with Judge Perry during the period when he was her supervisor. However, it does appear that after she did move in with him, Judge Perry voted on budgetary matters involving the employee. The results of our investigation indicate violations of use of office and conflict of disclosure, conflict of interest disclosure laws. In the stipulated final order in your meeting books, Chris Perry is agreeing to pay a civil penalty of $100. And I have the penalty matrix available if there are questions.
Okay. Are there any questions of staff? Yes.
I'd just like to hear more about how we came to the conclusion of the $100.
The penalty matrix indicates two points, which is right on the borderline of a letter of education versus a civil penalty. The number of violations was 5, counting them all, and so it was the director's judgment that he accept a civil penalty versus a letter of education.
And what would be the maximum of the civil penalty?
5 violations would be $20,000.
$25,000.
$25,000.
Yeah. Commissioner Sugar.
What information do you have about the Judge Perry's current status as a judge?
He was recalled before after all of this happened, but before our investigation really went full-fledged. It was during the criminal investigation.
Was he criminally prosecuted?
He was not.
Was a report made to the Oregon Judicial Fitness Commission?
The Wheeler County Commission calls them a judge, and they call their commission a county court.
The but
got it. So is he an attorney?
No.
No.
Oh, interesting. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. More like a county commissioner. But some counties in Oregon have judicial type authority over certain matters like child dependency, justice of the peace, mm-hmm. community court type of matters. Wheeler's one of those counties that's retained that status.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yes, Commissioner O'Day.
I've got a question about the check. So the stipulated facts indicate that he signed the check, which was going to his brother. Is that one of the facts upon which we're finding a violation here?
It was his failure to disclose the conflict of interest when he signed the check. The check was, the brother is employed by a large paving company, and what the county road department had contracted to purchase supplies from that company, not to hire them to do the paving, just it was a supply check. And so when it came to the judge and the county treasurer, he signed it and did not disclose.
Do we know under Wheeler County's policies whether there would have been anybody else that could have signed that check?
Any of the other commissioners could have signed.
Okay. And as the presiding judge, what would the disclosure have looked like for him?
Well, under 120, he would disclose that the company that this check is going to employs a relative, and he would have
said, public.
Yeah, in a public meeting in when this came to the county commission for approval.
So I think, personally, but I'm fine with everything except for that particular act. Because of the unique nature of a presiding officer of a county court, where he's exercising administrative authority and signing a check through a process where his fellow commissioners, or in this case judges, had approved the contract. Had he been like a county administrator, of course he would have reported it to his superiors, look, I've got this conflict of interest. The checks don't get signed in a public meeting. There really is no practical way for him to disclose this conflict. And because he didn't participate in the decision in awarding the contract and it's merely an administrative act of signing a check to, do payment, I personally have a little bit of a problem holding him accountable and the precedent that sets in this particular case. Again, everything else fine with me, but I'm not sure that that ministerial act of signing a check, for which there really is no practical way for him to disclose a conflict, even if that was a conflict, and I'm not sure that it is. Like I said, I just have some problems with that. Everything else, good with, but that particular point, I'm not there.
Mr. Burson? So I think we kind of come full circle back here, and I think it's one of the things that we, or myself, was looking at when we're looking at setting this penalty. I know it can be a very high penalty with, $25,000, but that's part of my reasoning in that we're only looking at $100 here. But I will say that the commission's been pretty consistent over time that when you sign the check, you are met with a conflict, even when there's like dual signatures on checks. But we do struggle with that small group of elected individuals in the state that, say, don't maybe attend as many meetings as other people do to be able to declare those conflicts, sheriffs, DAs, and in this case, this is a county judge doing an administrative act. The governor themselves have actually asked questions like, how do I disclose a conflict of interest? And we've given advice around, there can be some type of public announcement that comes out. This person could have disclosed that to the county administrator. I don't know if Wheeler County has an administrator, and said, I have a conflict. My brother works for this company. But I mean, I understand what you're saying, that some of these people have some difficult times. Like sheriffs, they don't normally have meetings, and so trying to put out like a public announcement. Now, it has gotten easier since most jurisdictions now have websites, and we've even accepted, like, when they put it on their website, that there's this conflict of interest that they're facing. So I do hear what you're saying, that it's difficult to do, but that also went into my reasoning on the level of the penalty. So, being as small as it is.
Okay, back to discussion on this item. Is there additional discussion or questions? Commissioner Mason?
Sure, I just think the penalty is too small, and I would push to reject it.
Okay, would you care to offer an amendment? Or I guess we can't amend a stipulated final order.
Yeah,
we can just accept or reject it.
I mean, it just seems to me it's less than a speeding ticket. Mm-hmm. I mean, for multiple violations, and I know we have a matrix, but I think that's where the commission kind of plays a role, is to determine whether that's appropriate penalty or is it, impacts negatively on the credibility of the commission if it's too low.
Okay. Commissioner Keene?
I wanted to just go back one step about the conflict of interest. And just clarify, this would have been a potential conflict of interest unless there was some evidence that the brother, just as an employee, necessarily would make more money with the contract. Is that correct?
No, it would be an actual, because what we would look at is it is a business of which the brother is associated.
Right.
So whether the brother actually makes money, but you're...
But it has to be to his economic benefit. I thought we've interpreted in the past that unless you're a partner or an owner... the brother would not have necessarily an increased economic benefit, correct?
You're right. We don't know what the brother, out of that contract, what would trickle down to the brother, for lack of a better worse phrase. But the conflict of interest is around, it is a benefit to the public official, a public official's relative,
right,
or business of which the public official or the public official's relative is associated.
Right.
And so it would be the business of which the public official's relative is associated.
Right.
So,
and business with which is associated includes employees.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
But we've had this in the past. We've had where it's an employer. I remember we had a city one time where one of the employees worked for PGE, and they make a payment every month to PGE for their street lights, and there was a complaint filed about them not declaring a conflict of interest about him agreeing to pay the light bill for the city every month. So we've had this come up, and I know it's always been kind of a it's not a straight benefit to the relative, but it is a business of which they're associated. So
okay. Thank you. Back in discussion, is there discussion questions, or would somebody like to propose a motion?
I would move that we approve the stipulated order as published.
Okay, Commissioner Starr moves that we approve the stipulated order in item number 7. We'll proceed with a roll call vote.
Commissioner Sugar?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Kiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Nay.
Commissioner O'Day?
Nay.
Chair Burke?
Nay.
Motion passes 6-3.
Okay, very good. We go on to item number 8, the case of Nadissa Chaney of the Portland Village School Board of Directors.
Okay, Chair Burke and Commissioners, if with your permission, could I take items 8 through 12 together because they're...
Which items?
Assume the same circumstances. Sure. Items 8 through 12.
8 through 12.
Yeah.
Without objection? Okay.
Chair Burke, Commissioners, these five individuals, Medissa Chaney, Steve Dyer, Lauren Rook, Dennis Terzian, and Doreen Knopfiger, were members of the board of Portland Village School, which is a public charter school. A complaint was filed alleging that they, members of the school board, may have violated the executive session provisions of Oregon Public Meetings Law on May 24th, 2018. On August 10th, the commission found cause to move these cases to investigation in order to determine if the board members discussed unauthorized topics and made final decisions during executive session. Rather than complete the investigation phase, these individuals wish to settle their cases. The signed stipulated final orders are in your meeting book with the sanction of a letter of education, which is the maximum sanction allowed under the penalty matrix. I should note that recently three school boards, the board president and two newly appointed board members, took the commission's training on executive session law done by Tammy Hendrick. So.
Okay, very good. Is there any discussion or questions? If there's no discussion or questions, I'll entertain a motion.
Do we need to do separately?
I think we need to go, yes, okay. We'll go on these separately. My apologies. Rookie mistake. We'll go into, yeah, we have to vote on these separately. So the first one is item 8. Discussion, questions, or a motion related to item 8.
I move that we approve staff recommendation in regard to item 8.
Okay. Commissioner Sosa moves we adopt.
Adopt the stipulated final order.
Adopt the stipulated final order. Please proceed with a roll call vote.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Mr. Sugar?
Aye.
Mr. Sosa?
Aye.
Mr. Starr?
Aye.
Mr. Edwards?
Aye.
Mr. Fiskum?
Aye.
Mr. Keene?
Aye.
Mr. Mason?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay. We go to item 9. Steve Dyer, Portland Village School Board of Directors.
Move that we accept stipulated final order for item number 9.
Okay. Commissioner Sosa moves we accept stipulated order for item number 9. Let's proceed to roll call vote.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Mr. Sugar?
Aye.
Mr. Sosa?
Aye.
Mr. Starr?
Aye.
Mr. Edwards?
Aye.
Mr. Fiskum?
Aye.
Mr. Keene?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay. We go to item 10, case of Lauren Rook, Portland Village School Board of Directors.
I move that we accept stipulated final order in regard to item 10.
Commissioner Sosa moves we adopt the stipulated order. Let's go to the roll call vote.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Mr. Sugar?
Aye.
Mr. Sosa?
Aye.
Mr. Starr?
Aye.
Mr. Edwards?
Aye.
Mr. Fiskum?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Item 11, case of Dennis Terzian, Portland Village School Board of Directors.
Move that we accept stipulated final order in regard to item 11.
Okay, is it so moved? Roll call vote.
Mr. Fiskum?
Aye.
Mr. Keene?
Aye.
Mr. Mason?
Aye.
Mr. O'Day?
Aye.
Mr. Sugar?
Aye.
Mr. Sosa?
Aye.
Mr. Starr?
Aye.
Mr. Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Item 12, Doreen Knopfiger, Portland Village School Board of Directors.
Move that we accept stipulated final order in regard to item number 12.
Is it so moved? For the roll call vote.
Mr. Edwards?
Aye.
Mr. Fiskum?
Aye.
Mr. Keene?
Aye.
Mr. Mason?
Aye.
Mr. O'Day?
Aye.
Mr. Sugar?
Aye.
Mr. Sosa?
Aye.
Mr. Starr?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, that brings us to item number 13, the case of Mr. Russ Axelrod, Mayor, City of West Lynn.
I was going to ask to take item numbers 13 through 15 together. Is your stipulated final orders pertaining to an executive session complaint? These people are all members of the same governing body.
Okay. Without objection.
Okay, thank you. So, Chair Burke, Commissioners Haley Whedon, discussing item numbers 13 through 15 involving City of West Lynn Mayor Russ Axelrod and City Council members Brenda Perry and Bob Martin. All three of the respondents in this matter had collectively engaged Chad Jacobs as their attorney. Russ Axelrod is the mayor of the City of West Lynn, and that position votes as part of the City Council. Brenda Perry and Bob Martin were city councilors for the City of West Lynn during the period relevant to the complaint, and their terms ended at the first of the year, so they no longer serve on the City Council. The stipulated final orders, as I just said, resulted from a complaint filed by a citizen of West Lynn alleging violations of ORS 192.60 executive session law. In this case, the executive session in question was held on October 15, 2018, and the stated purpose on the agenda was listed as ORS 192-662-I, which was to review and evaluate the employment-related performance of the city attorney. So specifically, the complaint stated that the city council failed to provide the city attorney an opportunity to request that the matter be heard in an open hearing, which is a prerequisite under the statute. The complaint also alleged that the council may have discussed budget and policy-related matters through contemplating the city attorney's services structure and discussing how to conduct a more formal future evaluation of the attorney's services. The Government Ethics Commission actually considered the preliminary review report for this matter in its last meeting in December. I'll mention that during that time, you did question whether that particular provision, 662-I, would have pertained in this particular situation. Since then, I did a little bit of research on the city charter. As you can see, Mayor Axelrod, it's Section B, and for Brenda, Mrs. Perry, and Mr. Martin, Section C of their stipulated final orders. The city charter did specifically state that the position of city attorney is an officer, so it went ahead and went that way. Also, whenever the commission considered this matter in its last meeting in December, Mayor Axelrod and the respondent's attorney, Mr. Jacobs, attended and requested at that time to go ahead and proceed with the stipulated final order. The 30-day preliminary review period was up, so the commission did go ahead and vote to move it to investigation. So in an order to go ahead and settle, we did move forward, and you got the stipulated final orders right here in court.
Okay.
You all have any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Whedon. Discussion? Questions? Commissioner O'Day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to disclose an ex parte contact related to this matter. As I think some of you know, I serve on the board of the Oregon City County Managers Association. One of my fellow city managers serves on the board with me is the city manager of West Lynn. And when this incident occurred, she called me and said, "Hey, I think a mistake has happened. What do I do?" And I directed her to call the commission staff and talk with her legal counsel. So that was really just the extent of the conversation I had about this. I spoke with our legal counsel about this last time and just wanted to get that out on the record, that I did have that contact just very briefly with that particular city manager and directed that, again, that she contact the commission, self-disclose the violation, and then work through the process accordingly.
Okay. Thank you for that. Commissioner O'Day. Is there additional discussion, questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion on the matter of item 13, Russ Axelrod.
I move that we accept stipulated final order.
Okay, it is so moved. Let's go to a roll call vote.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiftham?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sugar?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Brings us to item 14, the matter of Brenda Perry. Discussion or entertain a motion? Yes, Commissioner Sugar.
We're working our way through all of these people. I just have one question. This is resulting in a letter of education. It was basically self-reported by the individuals who believed that it was a violation. Sort of, they discovered it and realized. And I'm trying to figure out why. I know I've asked this question before, so forgive me. But why the letter of education couldn't have just happened, and why we have to do this more formal process that creates a admissions and a record and things like that, when there seems to be some like sort of desire for the education and self-effacing approach to what has occurred. So I'm trying to make sure I understand how we ended up with such a formal process.
Just to be really clear, that there actually was a complainant in this, and so there was a complaint filed.
Separate from the...
Yeah.
Okay.
That you might remember when they came in and talked to you in December, they were telling you that they had made the violation. So I think there's a little bit of confusion there, but there actually was a complainant, a complaint filed, and so once a complaint is filed, that's within our jurisdiction, we have to go through the preliminary review process. And you ended that in December, and we're in investigation. So.
Thank you. I think I missed that part. I was thinking they just called and asked for guidance, or, oh gosh, we think we messed up. But you're saying there was a more formal complaint, and then they realized, potentially.
I'll defer to staff as the timing of it.
I can clarify. I'm sorry. I believe that the executive session happened and it was brought to their attention that there may be a violation. So they contacted Commissioner O'Day, who directed them to contact the commission. They called the commission. They spoke with Tammy. And Tammy discussed, the matter had already occurred. So Tammy kind of discussed general application of the law. And I believe that Tammy told them that in order for it to really formally trigger a self-reporting, they would have to file a complaint against themselves. Another citizen ended up filing the complaint. They didn't file the complaint technically against themselves. They didn't fill out the complaint form. They just called and talked to Tammy. So that's the reason for the whole.
It's kind of a close call. Thank you. I don't know. I feel like when people come and ask for guidance and support and help, and then we just slap them with a stipulated order where they have to make admissions and things. I don't know. I'm just questioning. I know our mission is primarily education, and they certainly have been willing to accept responsibility for what they did. Maybe from a process perspective, we can talk about this. I'm more than happy to support these stipulated final orders today, but I also think talking about the bigger picture of how we handle it when people, individuals or a group of elected officials come in and say, we think we messed up, we'd like some help sorting it out.
So on that note, Commissioner Sugar and Commissioners, I also offered in that same conversation an explanation of the initial question asked of me, is there a requirement to file a complaint on yourself if a violation has occurred? And I answered the question, but then I did advise them that our agency does provide training, and I offered to extend training to them, and they indicated that they were very interested, but at this point in time, they were going to hold off on training. So we did talk about training. They are going to have us come in. I also offered that we could provide them some general guidance at this point, but because something had already occurred, I couldn't provide specific guidance to that incident, but we are going to work with them to provide them some training to get them to the point to where this doesn't happen again for them. So absolutely, big support from that conversation came out of the discussion that had happened before I actually got on the phone with them. So we will work towards that. Absolutely.
I'm very grateful to you, Commissioner Sugar, for bringing this up. I'd forgotten the details on that as well. And maybe at some point in the proper venue, we could look at the process and maybe streamline it a little bit. Commissioner O'Day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say the same thing. I do think it'd be great if we could explore the possibility of creating a self-reporting mechanism in our own procedures and give some leniency as a result of those that realize, hey, I've made a mistake. I want to let that be known, and I want to correct it in an appropriate way, whether it be through education or what have you. And I honestly did not know, you know, whether there was a self-reporting or not, which is why I sent the person to the staff. But I do think, you know, this case highlights that you know, for those of us who also are subject to other regulatory bodies in the state, often there is kind of a self-reporting mechanism built in, and I think it's something that it's worth having the commission explore.
Okay, very good. Would it be appropriate to ask staff to maybe outline some options along those lines for a future meeting or a future retreat or something?
We can certainly talk about that, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. But as it is, that does leave us back at item 14. Is there a discussion or a motion or a question?
Move approval.
Okay, Commissioner Keene moves approval of item 14 relating to Brenda Perry. Go to a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Mr. Edwards?
Aye.
Mr. Fiskum?
Fiskum votes aye.
Dynamite!
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sugar?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, very good. That brings us to default final orders, of which there are none. And that brings us to
report. No,
I
did
15,
sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped one. My error. I'm sorry. We'll go to item 15, the case of Bob Martin.
Move approval.
Okay. Commissioner Keene moves approval. Go to a roll call vote.
Commissioner Sugar?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Mr. Edwards?
Aye.
Mr. Fiskum?
Aye.
Mr. Keene?
Aye.
Mr. Mason?
Aye.
Mr. O'Day?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay. Made an illegal procedure penalty, so let's see if I can recover from that.
You were just seeing if we were paying attention. That's all. Testing us.
Yep. And so no default final order, so we'll go to reports of investigations. That takes us to item 16, the case of, please accept my apologies if I butcher any of these names, Anne Marie Vitti. Mm-hmm. Portland Village School Board of Directors.
Okay. Chair Burke, Commissioners, this item and the next one are the same incident, so I'm going to report on those two together.
Okay. So without objection, we'll accept a report on both of them simultaneously.
Okay. These two individuals, Anne Marie Vitti and Ellen Harris, were the teacher members of the board of Portland Village School, which above you just approved stipulated final orders for the other board members. On August 10th, the commission found cause to move these cases to investigation in order to determine if they may have participated in discussion of unauthorized topics and made final decisions in executive session, which would have been a violation of 192.660. The two teacher members of the board, Ms. Vitti and Ms. Harris, attended only the last 15 minutes of this executive session in question, and the executive session itself lasted over 2 hours. And in what they apparently were brought in at the end, I listened to the audio, and I couldn't even determine exactly when they were brought in, but it looks like somewhere between the last 10 and 15 minutes to look at what the other members of the board had already completed. And it information was insufficient to determine that these two teachers participated in any final decisions or discussion of unauthorized topics during that time. The reports are in your meeting book with recommendation to dismiss these complaints.
Is there any discussion or are there questions? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion relating to item 16.
I move that we adopt staff recommendation to dismiss the complaint.
Okay. Commissioner Sosa so moves. Go to a vote.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sugar?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Mr. Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Chair Burke.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Brings us to item 17, case of Ellen Harris. Entertain a motion.
I move that we adopt staff recommendation to dismiss the complaint.
Commissioner Sosa so moves. Go to the vote.
Commissioner Mason.
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day.
Aye.
Commissioner Sugar.
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa.
Aye.
Commissioner Starr.
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards.
Aye.
Commissioner Fischem.
Aye.
Commissioner Keene.
Aye.
Chair Burke.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, that brings us to a series of items where we will have testimony. And number 18, first of all, is the case of Dick Anderson, counselor of the city of Lincoln City. And the person who is asked to testify on this is, excuse me if I get the name wrong, Andrea Coit, who has legal counsel. And so if I understand the procedure correctly, I want to make sure I'm straight on this. You'll have the staff report first. Commissioners will have the opportunity to ask questions of staff, and then you will be given an opportunity to testify, and there'll be an opportunity to ask you questions, and then the item will go to discussion and possible motion. Yes, ma'am.
Ma'am, thank you. Ms. Coit.
Ms. Coit.
I don't plan to testify. I'm here as counsel for my clients.
Okay.
I would like to just present our position briefly and entertain questions. All of my clients are here if we would like to hear from them, and they will testify.
Okay, very good. And welcome everyone to the Ethics Commission meeting. It's good to see you here. Okay, with that, on item 18, we'll proceed with the staff report.
Okay, Chair Burke, commissioners, I'm going to discuss items 18 through 23 together as they concern the same executive session issue.
Okay.
I will point out that Ms. Coit is the attorney for five members of this governing body, and the sixth member, former Mayor Don Williams, has another attorney. His name is Micah Fargy, but I don't see him or Mr. Williams in attendance today, so I'm just going to discuss all six of these together. These six individuals are city council members for Lincoln City, and they held an executive session on June 4th of last year from which the complainant was excluded. ORS 192.660 Section 4 states that representatives of the news media shall be allowed to attend executive sessions aside from a few exceptions, none of which apply in this case. The individual excluded who filed the complaint in this case owns and operates an online publication called Lincoln City Homepage. He had been corresponding with city staff and writing articles about local government and city council members for a few years. He contacted the city in late April of last year, inquiring about how exactly he could attend executive sessions. City staff responded on May 2nd, telling him he must apply to the city council for admittance to executive session, and that the council's decision would be based on the 2016 Attorney General's opinion on the subject of media's attendance at executive sessions. On May 3rd, the following day, he replied to the city officer that he would be attending the next executive session. A week later, on May 10th, the city, for the first time, provided him with the city's media policy and the AG's opinion, and told him he must apply to the city council for approval using the city policy's criteria as a guide, and that the city council would not consider his request until its next regular meeting, which was to be held on June 11th, thus foreclosing the complainant's attendance at the executive sessions held prior to that on May 14th and June 4th. The complainant did not file an application, but instead he came to a work session of the council on June 4th, and attempted to attend the executive session that followed, arguing that the council was aware of his publication, the Lincoln City homepage. He was excluded from that executive session, apparently for failing to file an application. However, it appears that even if he had filed an application, he would have been excluded from the executive session, as he'd been told that any application would not be considered until June 11th. It appears that compliance with the city's media policy and procedures would have prevented the complainant from attending the two executive sessions that occurred after he first asked the city, after he first emailed the city his intention to attend an executive session. The city council members argue that on June 4th, The complainant had not been deemed to be a representative of the news media according to their media policy. The city staff excluded him, not the city council members. And the third argument is that the city attorney advised them that they couldn't make a decision concerning his attendance because they were not in a public meeting at the time. There appears to be a preponderance of evidence that the six members of the governing body participated in an executive session held on June 4th from which the complainant was improperly excluded. The reports are in your meeting book with a recommendation to make a preliminary finding of one violation of ORS 192.660.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions for staff relating to this item or comments? Commissioner O'Day, did you sent a letter earlier in the week?
Yeah, I gave staff a heads up on where I stand on this particular case, but I think Commissioner or Mr. Chair, it could be probably more appropriate just let the proceeding down, and then I'll prior to a motion kind of state my position and where I sit on it. But I don't have any questions of staff.
Okay, very well, Commissioner Sugar.
Is the complainant present?
No, he couldn't make it today.
But he was invited.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just emailed me this morning. He was planning to come, but something happened, I guess.
Thank you.
Work happens. Are there any other questions? Okay. If there are no questions or comments prior to entertaining a motion, Commissioner O'Day, did you want to say anything?
Well, I think we're going to hear from the respondents.
That's
counsel.
Right.
Okay.
That's
I can certainly put my position out right now if that's appropriate. Or
well, I want to defer to you what you want to do.
Okay.
So that's fine. So, Ms. Coit, if you'd like to comment, or any of your clients would like to comment.
Thank you. So we're all familiar with this case. I've been here talking about it before. The facts are not in dispute. I would like to point out that my clients were not interviewed. No one from the city was interviewed in the course of this investigation, not a single person other than Mr. Werner, who was at this pre-executive session get-together, was interviewed. There are some questions in the report about, well, did Mr. Chandler, the city manager, tell him he had to leave because they would not recognize him as media or he did not qualify? Mr. Chandler would have denied that to the investigator because he did not say that, and the other witnesses would have confirmed that. So I just want to point out that my clients have not been interviewed in this investigation.
Can I say something? I did send you several questions. They are represented by attorneys. I can't contact them, your clients.
That is correct. But they had nothing to do with setting up an interview. And my apologies if that was on me to offer.
I'm sorry. My understanding is that I asked you questions that they would have the answers to as their...
They were very limited questions. And it's in the right. book what my responses
okay.
were. It was whether they had seen his blog before. And it was a week before. So there was no time for investigations. I just wanted to point out that they would have liked to have given their positions on this.
Mm-hmm.
In the investigator's report, on page 26, she goes through...
Do we have
one? Did you see it before?
Page 118. Page 118.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, my apologies if it's numbered differently.
Page
22? 26.
118. Multiple number systems.
The investigator on page 26, and I apologize if it's different in your book, but she goes through there a list of information that she developed in the course of her investigation that she relies on to recommend that this council adopt the decision that Mr. Werner is a member of the media, that he is a representative of the media. She says he has a blog and he has a library press pass and he's reported on local sports. And she says, based on that, she has come to the conclusion that he is a member, a representative of institutional media. That is exactly what this commission cannot do. that is exactly what my clients, acting as a body, are authorized and legally allowed to do. They, under the AG's opinion, they do not have to take mere assertions from a person who has not previously been recognized as media, take his mere assertions that he is a representative of the media. They are allowed to ask for evidence. They did that. The policy that he was given is a direct adoption of the model policy that was developed by the task force of several public bodies in 2009 to deal with how do we identify who, in the first instance, is a representative of institutional media. Mr. Werner declined to follow that policy. My clients did not have an opportunity to review evidence and decide, as a matter of first instance, which they are entitled to do, if he was or was not a member of a representative of institutional media. The investigator in this case is usurping my client's authority. She is recommending that this commission decide, as a matter of first instance, that under these circumstances, a person with this background and these qualifications is a representative of the media. And I believe that that is beyond the authority of this commission. So to find a violation of subsection 4, that a member of the media was excluded, you must decide that Mr. Werner was a member of the media. That decision has never been made. My clients are entitled to make that decision. Had he come to a public session, it is brought up that the policy allows them to waive the requirement of submitting evidence. And that is true. The policy could have done that. Had Mr. Werner appeared at a public meeting and stood up and said, "Hi, you guys all know me. I write this blog. I want to come to executive session," they could have, at that time, acted as a body, made a decision to waive the requirement for evidence, and voted. But he did not do that. He did it in the few minutes before an executive session meeting was to begin. They could not, at that point, make a decision as a body that we are going to waive these requirements and identify and recognize him as media. So, this the AG does, well, the statute itself only requires that representatives of the media be allowed to attend, other than in the few specific examples. Mr. Werner was never, before June 4th, the date that this happened, identified as a representative of institutional media. There is nothing in the record that has been developed that would weigh one way or the other whether or not he would have been identified as institutional media. That decision belongs to my clients. It doesn't belong to this commission. So with that, I will take any questions.
Okay. Commissioner Sosa.
Yes, Ms. Coit, I do have some questions for you based on what I read in the record here. So you said that at no previous time did they have the opportunity to realize that he was a member of the media. If you look at page 8 of the report, or page 100, in the middle there, it says that in January 2018, he apparently appeared before the body, identified himself as Justin Werner, a senior reporter with the local news outlet LincolnCityHomepage.com, and then in the minutes was identified as a senior reporter for LincolnCityHomepage.com. So there is an instance months before where he had been before the city council, had identified himself as a member of the media, and was acknowledged as such in the meetings of that meeting. So there is that. And then after that, there are a number of instances where he is corresponding with different representatives from the city. If you look at page 13 of the investigative report, page 105, There's a paragraph that says that city employees are corresponding with him frequently during that five-month period from January to June. His publication is receiving numerous press releases of city events and other information. These correspondents include the city manager's office, the public library staff, the city community center staff, the HR department, the planning department, the IT department, and the city visitor and convention bureau. And then on the next page, page 14, there is an email on January 31st from the city recorder to him, which CCs the mayor, the city attorney, and the city manager, where it says, please be advised that we included you in the media group at your first request as an interested person. So my question for you is, to what extent do you feel that him being acknowledged by various representatives of the city who are staff, to what degree has that been imputed as recognition on the part of the council?
Thank you for the question. Corresponding with city staff does not get the information in front of my clients. The city policy adopted by Lincoln City says that a member, an interested person who would like to attend executive session as a representative of the media must submit an application and some sort of evidence to be decided, to be reviewed and decided by the city council. That can only be done at a public session of the city council. There is no evidence, and again, my clients were not interviewed, that any of them were aware that these correspondents were going back and forth with Kathy Steer when he said, I would like to attend, or I'm going to attend the executive session meeting. My clients did not know about that. It was not brought forward to be put on the agenda at a public session. So, you know, there is a distinction between the public body, the governing body of the city, and the staff. And we are here looking at whether or not the public, the individual members of the city council intentionally excluded a person that they knew to be a member of a recognized representative of the media. And I don't think that any of the items that you've identified would be dismissed by them at all. What the problem that I have with this situation is that that information was developed by your investigator. That information was not brought to the city council for a decision by that body, as it should have been. If there's a problem with the policy, if somebody feels that the policy impedes on the rights of Mr. Werner to exercise his First Amendment rights or to quickly get before into an executive session meeting, this is not the body to pass judgment on that. That is certainly something that can be filed in the Lincoln County Courthouse in a declaratory judgment against this policy. But this commission does not have the authority, unless there's a violation that you know, we require advance notice once he's been recognized as a member of the media, or that we have developed a definition that would exclude what everyone would reasonably conclude to be media. Other than those situations, if we have problems with the policy, that needs to be challenged in court. That is not to be challenged by this commission.
What about the fact that he had appeared before the body previously in January and had been acknowledged in the meetings as represented by the media? How do you address that?
Mr. Werner attended a public meeting and stood up in the public session, the public comment portion of it, and he can identify himself whatever, however he would like. And the AG's opinion directs us on that we do not have to accept mere assertions that someone is a representative of the media. We can require proof. He did. He stood up and he said, I don't know exactly what he said, but it was during the public comment session. My clients are not at all involved in writing the minutes of what occurred at that meeting. So that would be my response to that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if you'll indulge me, I have a few more follow-ups. Then, so he does indicate in an email to the city recorder on April 27th, I would like to attend executive sessions. How would I go about doing that exactly? I understand I can't write about what I hear in the sessions. Was he ever given any sort of formal application to fill out in response to that email in April?
No, and the policy does not require a formal application. He was instructed, you need to send us information that would substantiate your request to be recognized as a member of the media. Here is our policy and the Attorney General's opinion to guide your submissions.
And was there any public meeting between April 27th and June 4th at which his request to attend executive session could have been taken up?
I believe there was a May meeting. I'll need to look back
on
that. May 14th, thank you. But again, there was nothing. Mr. Warner did not respond when Ms. Steer responded to his email saying, here's what you would do. You need to submit evidence. Here is our policy to guide you if it conflicts with the AG's opinion. The AG's opinion will control. He did not respond to that.
If he had responded, it would have been too late to get on the agenda for the 14th meeting. You have to submit at least, he was told later, a week in advance to get on the agenda. So.
That very well may be possible. But again, it all goes back to he's not being, a member of the media is not being excluded from an executive session meeting until that person has been recognized as a representative of the media. That had not happened yet.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay. Speaker list now is Commissioner Edwards, Staff Executive Director Burson, and Commissioner Keene. Commissioner Edwards.
I'd like to hear from Ms. Alpuck. I feel like there have been several assertions made in regards to this, and I would like to hear from you if there's any response in regards to the investigation or the position of the recommendation.
Sure. So as the investigator has, I think, well set out in this report, Mr. Warner asked to go to the executive session, said he was going to attend the next executive session, I think on May 10th, is that correct?
May 14th.
And was told that he would have to submit an application, which, as Commissioner Sosa points out, he was never given something to fill out. And they would not consider it till June 11th, and the executive session we're considering whether he was improperly excluded from occurred before that, June 4th. So there would not have been, it would have been futile in any respect. And he was also given a copy of this Attorney General's opinion, which was an opinion that was written at the request of the Ethics Commission to try to help them to comply with their statutory requirement to enforce the executive session laws, particularly with news media. This is not a First Amendment issue. There is no First Amendment right to attend an executive session by media. That's very clear. It's a statutory issue. There is a statute that says news representatives of the news media shall be allowed to attend executive sessions. That is what you have been tasked with enforcing. The AG opinion that he was given by the City Council and told they will comply with says, although it does say that mere assertion, they don't have to accept mere assertion, it also says the statute does not authorize excluding representatives of the news media for failure to provide their credentials within certain deadlines, and also that advance notice is not required. So it's pretty convenient for a City Council to say, well, we can't violate this provision until we recognize the person as representative of news media, and then have a provision or a policy that doesn't allow them to recognize them as a representative of news media when the person wants to attend an executive session. I think the investigative report also says you get notice of what's going to be in the executive session 4 days before. You don't even know if you want, you know, you want to attend it. So this policy, and I think Commissioner Sugar mentioned this at former, I think that's the core issue here is, was he precluded from attending that executive session because they were requiring these credentials and an analysis of them after it occurred?
And can you address the comment that was made about the applicability of this body to be able to assess the media?
And that was at my direction to the investigator. And the reason I directed her to do that is because, in my opinion, if this body doesn't think that Mr. Warner was a representative of the news media, we don't have a violation. It's not trying to usurp anything. It's getting to this. I think that that's a surfeit of caution on us, but we don't want to say, well, you violated this statute just because of the existence of your policy, because what you have to enforce is whether they excluded a representative of the news media.
Thank you.
Okay. You still have the floor? Are you yielding the floor, Commissioner Edwards?
Correct.
Okay. We go to Executive Director Ron Burson.
I'll go behind Commissioner Keene.
Okay. Commissioner Keene.
Thank you. I just have one question following up on Commissioner Sosa's. Is it undisputed that the complainant did talk to staff members about his request to appear as a news person in executive session? You had been saying that even though there was all this contact that Mr. Sosa read off with staff members, that wasn't made available, or that the public body did not know, the governing body did not know of his request. Is that?
That is correct.
So it's undisputed that he did contact staff, but that at the time staff hadn't informed the elected officials.
He began contacting staff back in, I think, January and February of 20, whatever year we're back in here, 17 or 18.
Okay.
And was told at that time what the process was.
Okay. I just wanted to see if that was disputed.
That is not disputed.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Executive Director?
So my question is I think Commissioner Sosa brought this up on page 8. So you agree that he came to the council meeting on the 22nd of January and had identified himself, but the written minutes that in the red minutes also identify Mr. Werner as a senior reporter. Those were approved by the council, correct? Those minutes?
Correct.
So was there some kind of, you know, notation or whatever that this was his assertion, or is there some kind of notation they don't agree with this? Because it seems like to me, if they vote on those minutes, it feels like to me anyway, they're starting to approve this assertion by Mr. Werner that he is the senior reporter. So a citizen looking at their minutes, would they know that the council did not agree with Mr. Werner's assertion? I guess that's what I'm getting down to. Would a citizen reading the minutes know that this council did not believe that Mr. Werner was news media?
Correct. When people attend and speak during the public portion of the meeting, they can identify themselves however they want to. The purpose of the minutes is to document exactly what happened at the meeting. So he identified himself as the senior reporter for his blog. That was written down in the minutes, and the minutes accurately reflected what happened. My clients did not have the authority at that point or the need to pass on whether or not they agreed with that characterization of who he was.
So they didn't challenge that at the time? Like
I don't think that would be appropriate. He did say, you mean at the meeting?
Yeah, when he was at the meeting and he said, I'm a senior reporter for this, and as I'm a member of the news media, did they say, you know, this is an unrecognized...
No.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Are there any other... Yes, Commissioner Sugar.
Thank you. Council, I have a couple of questions regarding the timeline. I know that Mr. Werner requested that he be allowed to attend the executive session, and the city recorder on May 10th told him he must apply in advance. And then I understand that there was a regular council meeting on the 14th, which was inadequate time for him to have applied and been considered by the council. But then I also see on page 29 of the investigator's report that there was a regular council meeting that was canceled that would have allowed the council to consider his request prior to the June 4th meeting. But is that undisputed?
The meeting was Memorial Day. It was a holiday, so it couldn't have happened. But again, I want to get back to the underlying issue here is he did not submit anything beyond his email to Kathy Steer, the city recorder, saying, I'm going to attend executive session. He did not respond to her saying, you need to submit this information so I can put you on the agenda. He didn't do that. So the step to get him in front of the council at any public session meeting has not to this day occurred. So even if this had not been Memorial Day, there would have been nothing in front of the council, unless he had shown up and they could have at that point waived the requirements for submission and made a decision there. That could have happened. But none of this happened. So my clients never had the chance to make a decision on whether or not he was recognized as a representative of the media.
So to follow up on that, am I understanding correctly that the policy requires that the individual seeking to be treated as a member of the news media has to submit some material or request to the council? But what an application is actually not defined. There isn't a form to fill out. So I guess I'm a little confused about what more was required from him beyond his request for the council to put it on their agenda and consider his request.
He would have responded to Ms. Steer's email saying, okay, here is who I am, and then could have provided anything that Ms. Gould found. He could have done anything. The policy itself is an adoption of the model policy. It is intentionally broad because there were at that time so many new forms of media out there that they didn't want to confine it to a specific application. They would have considered anything at that point. They just had to have the process go forward so that they could properly consider it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner O'Day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it occurred to me why you keep on calling on me. It's okay. I sent an email setting forth kind of two different issues. One was exploring with staff whether I had a personal conflict of interest on this. So I don't think I do, but I'll ask a few questions just to get that out of the way. I know that some of these, first, back in 2009 when the draft policy was put together, I was one of the attorneys that aided the League of Oregon Cities. It was done with the City of Salem in putting it together. So it's an issue with which I've got a lot of familiarity and have worked on for now well over a decade. And when I was with the League of Oregon Cities, as its general counsel, it was not uncommon for city officials to call me, city attorneys, elected officials, city managers, to seek guidance on various matters. In some of these other matters related to Lincoln City, there have been, within the record, indications that some city officials may have called the League at the time that I was its general counsel, although I have no particular recollection of talking with anybody at Lincoln City about this matter. It's possible that I did because I get lots of calls like that. So with this particular matter, I'll just ask Ms. Gould real quickly, did your investigation show at any point whether I personally was involved in this?
No.
Okay. That's what I expected. And Ms. Coit, do you know, do your clients know if they ever contact me about these issues before?
They did not.
Okay. So with that, I don't think I have a conflict on this particular matter, although I certainly have an opinion, which I'll share later on. But Ms. Coit, a couple questions. The policy that you've referred to, the model policy, do you know when your council adopted that policy?
2010.
And I'm assuming it was in an open public meeting?
Yes.
Was there much, 2010 was a while ago, do you know if there was much debate around the policy? Any, or did it just kind of go right through?
Can I ask Mr. Anderson to?
There was certainly debate with council because it was a new and hot issue. Because we had blogs and Facebookers that were all attempting to come to council.
And do you know, Councilor Anderson, whether, if you don't mind me asking?
No, not at all.
Councilor Anderson, do you recall whether any individuals who claimed to be media, participated in that discussion or gave comment?
I can remember one specific individual, and I don't remember what form, but he was pushing the envelope that, in essence, caused the discussion and adopt the policy. But I can't quite recall where that was, if he did through the public hearing, public comments. But I just remember vividly, you know, that rising to such a high element that something needed to be put of record.
Was it this individual that filed this complaint?
No.
Okay. The timeline, I've got a couple questions as well, too, but it really would have more to do with your normal practice as a city. First of all, are you all paid as counselors?
No, not even a stipend.
How often do you meet?
At a minimum, two meetings a month, second and fourth Mondays. Then those are the public meetings. We have work sessions, generally the other Mondays of the month. So it could be, up to four meetings a month or more.
And is it common for them to be canceled?
No.
But the May meeting was canceled because it was on a holiday.
Yes, Memorial Day holiday.
How often in advance do you notice your meetings? Notice of a meeting?
Well, they're calendared out, every second and fourth Monday. So I don't know specifically if, whether it's 30 days or...
With respect to your council agenda, how far in advance do you let the items be known as to what you're going to talk about? I think Oregon law requires you to notice your meetings, and that part of that notice needs to be an indication of what you're going to be talking about.
Yeah. The public council meetings are made public with the whole package and agenda, generally the Wednesday before the Monday meeting.
Okay. So just a little bit under 7 days, then 5 days.
Yes. Okay.
Do you know how long it takes for your council to, your staff, to put the packet together?
Well, they're firming it up on Monday, before the Monday, and then reviewing it, and it becomes public then on that Wednesday or early Thursday.
Do you guys have an application for somebody to fill out if they claim that they were a member of the news media because of the review under the policy?
We don't. No.
Okay. All right. That's all I have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are there additional questions?
Yeah, I have a question. So, Ms. Coy, I'm a little troubled by something that I see on page 22 of the report, or page 114, where Mr. Werner is indicating his desire to attend the meeting, and there's an email from the city recorder to him on May 2nd, which says, in regard to your request to attend the executive session meeting, council cannot make a decision in executive session, so if you believe that you qualify as a representative of the news media under Oregon law, you must make application to the city council to be admitted to the executive session meeting. And he responds the next day, I'll be attending the next executive session meeting. Thank you for pointing me in the right direction. And then from there, the next email, or the two emails after that, is from the city attorney to the city councilors indicating that it is not on the agenda for the upcoming meeting. So one of my concerns here is you clearly have someone who's indicating a desire to attend. You have a representative of the city saying, oh, well, you have to apply. And he says, oh, okay, great, well, I'm going to attend then. And then there's no follow-up that says, here's what an application entails, here is the information that we need from you, here's potentially a form that we have for you to fill out. So I'm a little troubled by the fact that he clearly thinks he's doing what he's supposed to do, and he's not being told that he needs to do anything more. So that to me is a little troubling. And I understand your position that in executive session, they are not able to consider his application, in quotes, to be permitted to attend as news media. And if I understand correctly, is it your position that the reason they can't do that is because you're not allowed to make a final determination in executive session?
Correct, on that issue. They would have to actually make the decision whether or not he was recognized as representative of the news media pursuant to the policy at a public session. Can I go back and comment on your first comment?
Yes.
Regarding the email from Ms. Steer that came on May 2nd, Mr. Werner had indicated before that he wanted to be a member attend the executive session. She responded to him on May 2nd, gave him a copy of the policy, and gave him a copy of the AG's opinion, and said, this will guide what you need to submit. And then he emails back and says, okay, well, I'm going to attend. And the city attorney at that point is placed on notice by Ms. Steer that we have someone from the news media, or someone who would like to be recognized as a representative of the news media for purposes of attending an executive session that I think is going to come up at the next public session. And Mr. Apicello, the city attorney, submitted his affidavit in this case because he also was not interviewed. And Mr. Werner did not respond with any of the evidence that they thought he was going to do. So the city attorney at that point concluded, whether it was proper or not, that he was not, Mr. Werner was not pursuing his application, and it was not placed on the agenda. I mean, that was an intentional act. We thought it was coming up on the agenda. He didn't submit anything or follow through, so it's not coming up on the agenda. The emails are in here showing that timeline.
Can I say something here? On May 2nd, when she said, with regard to your request to attend an executive session, you must make application, the council's decision will be based on the April 2016 OG opinion, Attorney General opinion on the subject. She did not, my records show that she did not make any attachments to that. She referred him to the Oregon Attorney General's opinion. It wasn't until May 10th, like an hour after the attorney wrote to the city council that he wasn't going to apply in time, that she then sent him the city's policy for the first time and a copy of the AG's opinion.
It is my understanding that he had been provided that policy prior to that. She provided it to him again in this email. Mr. Werner was informed of what the policy was well in advance. They were talking about this back in January and February.
I have a question. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt.
I have a follow-up for Ms. Alpha, actually. So I'm intrigued by the idea that they cannot make any decisions in executive session regarding this. And I'd like you to weigh in on this, because the statute says, that it's 192.660 subsection 6, says that you're not allowed to make a final determination in executive session. Would there have been a mechanism for them going into executive session, where you have an individual who's now saying, I'm a member of the news media, is there an ability for them to legally take that into consideration and make even a preliminary, if not a final determination on that issue in executive session?
I don't have a clear answer to that, but I do know what is sort of common practice. If they cannot make a decision, or they feel that they can't make a decision about a representative of the news media, is to delay the executive session so that they have an opportunity. If they felt they needed to do this in a public meeting, and you can call a special public meeting, you can call an emergency public meeting, they have those mechanisms available, and they can put the executive session, delay it. This happens. And I don't believe that there was someone, I think, who said that maybe they wouldn't have a meeting, but it did go forward. So I think there are mechanisms that they could have dealt with this, even if they could not make a decision in executive session about it.
Okay. Thank you.
In just a second. The fact that there was no application is interesting to me. There was no form. If I understand what was presented before, no form was designed because people thought that in the dynamic nature of media as it was, in 2010, that it would be difficult to capture every aspect. Blogs, email distribution, whatever it is. It seems to me that there would have been a good chance for a checkbox, newspaper, radio, TV, blog, other, and with an underline there where that could be evaluated. It seems to me that I understand, having been on a board before, which a water board that did executive sessions, I understand that the city councilors in Lincoln City are volunteers. I understand that they're trying to do what is good for the city. I understand that they are wanting to make sure that items in executive session don't get leaked out to the public. But it seems to me that the policy is a bit disingenuous in that there is no application. From what I can gather in this email exchange, the person who probably isn't a lawyer looked at the AG opinion and saw what he was doing and probably said, okay, I qualify. I'm telling you I'm going to be at the executive session. And without an application that you fill out that has some objective criteria that you can look at, I think excluding based on a policy, relying on an application that doesn't exist, borders on the disingenuous. And that's what disturbs me. And that's my comment. Perhaps you'd like to respond to that, and then I think Commissioner O'Day wanted to speak, and then Commissioner Keene.
Those are certainly valid concerns about the policy. And the policy may need to be revamped. The policy may need to be rewritten to comply with what is going on in this day and age. And perhaps an actual application form that could be filled out would be helpful. But it does not get us to a finding by this commission that he had been recognized as news media and was excluded. If he wanted to challenge the policy, you don't do that by filing a complaint with this body. You challenge the policy in court. I hear the concerns, and they're all valid concerns with the policy, and does this properly address everything that needs to be considered? But this is not the proper forum to decide those questions. The question is, there was a policy in place. That policy had not been declared invalid by a court. It did not violate the AG's opinion. That policy, as far as my counsel knew, and as far as we sit here today, is valid and in effect. He did not follow that policy, bringing it in front of my clients to make a decision. Until he did that, he was just a member of the public like you or I, standing up saying, I am a representative of institutional media. They are not required to accept that. Them going forward with an executive session meeting before any of this had come before them in a public session does not violate the statute.
Okay, Commissioner O'Day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Sosa raised an interesting question. I wanted to follow up on this as well, related to just public meetings law. Certainly there's a final decision prohibition in Oregon law during executive session. But to even get into executive session, there has to be a statutorily noticed reason, and there's a limited number of reasons. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, would determining whether somebody was media be an allowable subject for executive session?
Probably not, no.
So it would need to be a decision that have to be made in a public meeting anyways. And with regard to, you know, noticing of meetings, you know, under the AG's manual, which gives us some guidance on timelines, can you tell us a little bit more about special meetings and emergency meetings and regularly set meetings and what the normal notice period would be for those sorts of meetings?
Yeah, and I don't have my manual with me. As I recall, for an emergency meeting, that's 24 hours in advance.
Or less.
Or less notice. So that can be done, you know, quite quickly to decide an issue that comes up.
Does the AG manual give us much indication of what constitutes an emergency? Or more specifically, would determining whether somebody be media, would that be an emergency?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question because here we are with a violation and all these people... here because of this, and there's also the news media not being able to attend. So, I can't give you a clear answer to that, but I think there's certainly a valid point to be made that it would be.
Mr. Keene?
Thank you. I'll make my comments later, but right now I have a question for legal counsel. Is our jurisdiction here under 192.660 or 192.685 that says that complaints of violations of 192.660 can be made to the OGEC. Is that our jurisdiction only?
Yes.
And so are we then, so there's two parts. The executive session law, 192.660, says that representatives of the news media shall be allowed to attend exec sessions. But then that newer provision that was added by the legislature in 2015, in subsection 10, says the Ethics Commission may not adopt rules that establish what entities are considered representatives of the news media. They're entitled to attend executive sessions. So is our jurisdiction somewhere in the middle of that, that we are saying that we're not creating rules, we are just saying that because the AG said so, that this is a member of the news media? Or are we saying that we get to interpret what the terms of subsection 4 about representatives of the news media, we get to interpret that, but we don't make rules about it?
Yeah, I think that's right. So I went back and I looked, because the Ethics Commission went to the legislature, because this is a thorny issue
right.
for everybody involved. It's very difficult. And asked for rulemaking authority, not just about representative of the media, but the executive session provisions in as a whole, and got it for everything else, even though this is the thorny issue. And what happened at that meeting, I had pulled the history, is that the commission was asking for authority to be able to promulgate a rule. Bob Bovet, on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties, proposed a different amendment, which would allow each jurisdiction to define a representative of the media, because it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. They said no to that, because that would just create the same problem that we had. And then it's not a very easy to articulate discussion, but Senator Farioli said, basically how I read this is that he didn't want the Ethics Commission to write and enforce the rule. He wanted them to, it would be better for the commission to bring forth a proposition for a definition to be put in the statute, and that what he wanted was for the commission to operate on a case-by-case basis, which is consistent with 685, which is in a quasi-judicial type of role, as opposed to the regulatory body in general saying what things are, but that you're as sort of a quasi-judicial role of this proceeding, that a citizen can bring a complaint for free to this commission instead of instituting a lawsuit, and that you would decide this on a case-by-case basis. A couple of the legislators invited the commission to come back and propose a statutory definition, which hasn't happened. And subsequently, they got the advice from the Attorney General, which is simply an attempt to give the Attorney General's opinion in at what they think a court would conclude that representatives of the news media meant statutorily. So I think what we're left with, it's not very clear, like anything in this entire mess, but I think what you're left with is that you're sort of a quasi-judicial like body that's deciding this on a case-by-case basis. Well, how do you do that? There's some advice from the Attorney General who says, we think this is what a court would conclude.
Yeah.
And it's very vague.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's a very vague opinion.
So interestingly, this body is governed by the AG's recommendations and guidelines, but cities and counties aren't. It's advice, but it's not binding.
We are not their attorney. The Attorney General is not their attorney, and they are welcome to seek their own legal counsel. And they did, by the way, which I think it's in the investigative report. They did. They were advised by legal counsel not to allow this person to
right.
attend the executive session.
Right.
But I think that how do you enforce? The legislature has left you in a very difficult position.
Mm-hmm.
What do? You don't have a rule, but they want you on a case-by-case basis. And honestly, this is kind of a case-by-case basis. It's very fact-dependent. What do you do? And I think you look at the AG's opinion, which is an attempt to say what the statute says. I think it is intended to be a statutory definition, and you guys have to apply the requirement that representatives of the news media be allowed to attend. We don't have in this case, they never made that decision. They did not exclude this person because they decided he was not a representative of the news media. They excluded him on a procedural ground that he had to go to a public session that was occurring after, and he had not applied. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to do the best with the bad situation.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I can follow up real quick. Ms. Alpott, so well stated, you and I share a very similar opinion that we as a commission are put in a very difficult position here because the legislature took away our ability to promulgate rules to give people advance notice as to what we think the standards are, and you know have left you know the state without a uniform standard and for us to decide on a case-by-case basis. Are we required to decide on a case-by-case basis? I mean, could we exercise prosecutorial discretion, for lack of a better phrase, and choose to dismiss and not weigh in on these issues? Or are we required to make a decision that either they followed the statute or they did not?
That is a fascinating question, which I have been grappling with, because what is your duty here? You have very little, you've been put in a bind by the legislature and told to enforce this and to give people a free method to bring complaints, not a lawsuit, and at the same time given no guidance. And the people out trying to apply it, they have to do it as in the first instance, they have to try to decide. And in good faith, they do. They have the Attorney General opinion. They're trying to figure out what the statute means, too. What does it mean? I think that this body has, in the past, exercised a lot of discretion, and this is very messy. Do I think you have to? Could you dismiss in this case? I think you have the discretion to do that, definitely.
Mr. Chair, that is the way in which I'm leaning. Irrespective of some of the facts that we've heard today with regard to the policy, which again, you know, I've got some fingerprints on that, and you know, blame me if we fail to put a application together. But I think that this discussion and the evidence we have before us and the questions that we've all asking really highlights just how messy and difficult this issue is, which is one of the reasons why I think the legislature itself has had a hard time coming up with a definition. I personally subscribe to the view that we should let every home rule entity in Oregon craft its own policy, arrive through an open public process where the public is able to participate and comment, letting them decide for their purposes what a news media is. The legislature, you know, as you point out, wasn't willing to codify that approach, but I think it's nonetheless kind of left us in that limbo because as a state agency, we're trying to interpret this statute that lacks a definition, and our interpretation, I question whether our interpretation of that statute can even override a home rule entity's interpretation of that statute. And I think that, you know, the way that gets resolved is, as Ms. Coit said, is through legal action by somebody that says, I don't agree with this city's interpretation of the statute. That's the appropriate forum and venue for these issues. I don't like having to wrestle with this here at this body. I think it's a little bit of a game of gotcha that is unfair to volunteer elected officials throughout the state. And you know, I'd be more than happy on behalf of this commission to stand before the legislature this session and say, you know, we do need some definitions here and to work on a work group to help craft some definitions around this. I think the policy we put together was a pretty good start. But, you know, setting that aside, I for one would move that we dismiss this action and take no further action on it.
Okay, a motion is on the floor to dismiss this complaint. The motion being on the floor, we would go to discussion. I saw Commissioner Keynes, but she defers to Commissioner Sugar.
She's first.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Burke. So it sounds like we're in discussion mode now, and I've been sort of waiting to opine on this. I'm troubled that a procedural glitch or maneuver can prevent a member of the media, the alleged member of the media, from being considered. And I would hope that the city of Lincoln City and also any other local jurisdiction be more forthcoming about hearing someone's request to be considered and getting it on their agenda and not playing games with whether someone has applied or not applied or, you know, that kind of thing. I would like to know going forward that there's some sort of plan for, you know, sort of transparently handling these requests in the future. So that, and I would feel better about supporting Commissioner O'Day's motion if I knew that there was a plan for making this a more transparent process for people who claim to be members of the media. From this particular, these particular individuals with this governing body that we're considering today. So that's one piece for me, and that's more of my comfort level. Is knowing that we're not going to put individuals who are seeking to be considered in this box of, well, we're gonna have an executive session, and we're not going to consider your request until after the executive session that you were hoping to attend. That feels like gamesmanship to me, and I don't like it. And I don't know, did you want to respond to that?
I do, and I really appreciate those concerns. And I will just put out there that I am currently in discussions with the city attorney to work on putting out an actual application process to make this transparent to how this is done. So this will not go forward in the manner in which it was handled. And this is the first time it had ever come up in Lincoln City. So I hear your concerns, and they will be addressed.
Thank you. And so then with that, I do think that this area is gray for us in our jurisdiction. I also think that it's confusing potentially to smaller cities and city councils and commissions and boards. And I am interested in starting a conversation with this commission about whether our staff can, even though we don't potentially have the ability to interpret or regulate, in, as Ms. Alpaz said, it perhaps a guide. Or suggestions on how to engage, even if it's just some values like transparency and good information to the public or to members of the alleged members of the news media who are seeking to be considered. I mean, I think that we could, without being the Attorney General writing an opinion and without being the legislature formulating a statute, we can still do more to give guidance and provide going forward, because what I really hope that we don't see is again in the next year or two a repeat of something like this, and I think that's likely because the definition of news media is changing, frankly, daily in our internet culture. Mm-hmm. I think that we are a more agile body than the legislature in the sense that we can engage with the public more readily without so much debate, and we can provide more guidance if we're willing. So that's my. But I think I'm willing to support Commissioner O'Day's motion. Thank you.
Okay, speaker list now includes Commissioner Keene, Executive Director Burson, Commissioner Sosa, Commissioner O'Day, and myself. So we'll go to Commissioner Keene.
Thank you, Chair. I, as my question to Ms. Alpa might have shown, I am not sure we have jurisdiction here to make this determination. I think a lot of our questions here, excellent line of questioning from Mr. Sosa, I think they're being asked here because this policy is not a good one and it almost deprives, I think, people who alleged media representatives, it deprives them of due process in a sense in that they don't have a chance to prove that they are members of the media in time for them to go to the meeting that they want to go to. And by the time they see the notice of the executive session that interests them, it's too late for them to submit a request. I think our questions also go to the fact that there's evidence, undisputed evidence, that there was a lot of interaction between this blogger and the city staff. And I think it's on the city to make sure that staff information gets to the council. I do not think it's on members of the public to make sure that their numerous calls to staff also get stated to the members of the governing body. So, because otherwise you sort of set up a wall around the public body and you just you say, tell it to our staff. People call the staff daily, but it never filters up. That goes to the procedural fairness, I think, of this rule that's been written. I also hesitate to have them have a big application because I think that's a barrier. I don't believe there should be anything other than notice and, I mean, something that is as minimal a barrier as possible, because members of the big media don't have to do anything. And making a small blogger have to submit a large application is a barrier to entry. So I think that's why we're having so much trouble here, because it's not a very good policy, and we see the, you know, in 2010 it probably seemed fine because we didn't have this daily blogger issue. I mean, I bet in 2010, I don't even know if the word blog was around. So it's probably not that the policy was intended to be a barrier, but in 2018 it has certainly become one. And I would encourage all cities, including this one, to, if they're going to have a policy, written policy, it should be as minimal as possible, just something like, you have to notify us. Even notice, I mean, that is in itself a barrier that many cities don't have to claiming that someone is a member of the media. And I think a lot of the questions that we've been going through are sort of what a court should be asking. You know, the statute does say that, I mean, it's weird. Statute has two things. It says the provisions of this section shall be the exclusive remedy for an alleged violation, and that's the section about the court having jurisdiction. And then it says, notwithstanding that, the Oregon Government Ethics Commission shall review and investigate possible imposition of civil penalties. So those two things don't make sense. But I think that the legislature, and I actually don't think this is a home rule question. I think I defer to Commissioner O'Day for his thorough understanding of home rule, and I'm another advocate of home rule, the strength of home rule, but I don't believe that necessarily a city or county could have a charter that barred the public from going to any meetings, for example. And I believe that if the legislature were to issue standards for what the media is, I believe that cities and counties would have to follow that. But here, the legislature explicitly said, we cannot judge what a member of the news media is. If it were not for that section, I think that I would feel differently here. But despite what they may have said in their legislative history, like, oh, that would be a mess if every city and county gets to decide, that's where they left it, mm-hmm. by not legislating. And I agree with Commissioner Sugar, we should try to at least talk about these principles of not being a barrier, transparency, but I think that, unfortunately, this policy allows cities and counties to maybe, unintentionally, but still, have the result of policies that bar people who are truly members of the media. They may not be members that we want to hear from, or that maybe they're saying things that are uncomfortable or wrong in their blogs that some people may think are wrong, but they still, I mean, that's not a reason to bar someone, right? That's exactly not the reason to do so. So unfortunately here, although I would like to say this policy is void it was applied improperly, I don't believe we have the jurisdiction to do so. And I appreciate counsel saying that she's in communication with the city council about writing a policy that more reflects 2019.
They don't want to be back here again.
Thank you, Commissioner Keene. Executive Director Burson?
Just real quick. So in your policy, you recognized a couple of news sources in the policy. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so if another well-known news source had come to this meeting, Wall Street Journal, something like this, that maybe isn't part of the Oregon Newspaper Association or the Broadcaster's Guide, would your decision have been different at that time? Or would they have been able to make that decision, or would they have also excluded the Wall Street Journal? Because they wouldn't meet the policy and they weren't preordained somewhere to come into that. I mean, would the decision have been the same? And so that's, I mean, one of the things that, you know, we were looking at. I mean, you can't, I know we're standing on procedure. You wouldn't be able to do the procedure to recognize the Wall Street Journal, even though I'm sure that each of the counselors at the time would, in their own mind, say, that's media. They wouldn't be able to make that decision. So it really isn't a question. I just want to point out that if the policy includes some but not others, I guess what I would encourage this city and any other city to do is to make their policy maybe a little more open, flexible, because it seems pretty inflexible when there's only two listed and everybody else has to apply, and like I say, unless they can carry one of the association's credentials into that meeting.
Okay, thank you very much. Next on the speaker list is Commissioner Sosa.
Yeah, I fully appreciate the desire of the city not to have someone that they've never seen before, who they don't know who this person is, wander in and say, hi, I want to sit here in this executive session because I'm a member of whatever media outlet that no one's ever heard of. I can understand why that would be of concern to people in the city council. And I understand why that policy is in place. My problem with this situation is that this individual had been before the council before, had been acknowledged as a member of the media, had announced himself as a member of the media, had been acknowledged as such in the minutes, had been corresponding for months with representatives of the city, and I think had a reasonable presumption that he was being treated as a member of the media, would then be recognized as a member of the media, and then when he announces his intention to attend an executive session, is told, oh, you have to apply, and he says, oh, okay, very good, well, I'll be there, and is then given a decision by the Attorney General. Presumably he's not an attorney, and he had, I think, a reasonable presumption that he was a member of the media, had been treated as such, and would be given access to the executive session. The city's policy says that it may require a written form. It didn't require a written form. So it created a flexible standard and then decided to impose that standard in an inflexible way. The same is true here in the city's policy where it says the city may elect to forego this procedure. So the city has a very open and I think flexibly interpretable policy. And the issue that I have is that the city then chose to interpret that in a very strictly procedural way that in my mind goes against the spirit of the statute, which says that members of the news media will be allowed to attend. So that's my issue with this, and that's why I would be opposing the motion.
Commissioner O'Day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a couple of comments just to put some things in context. So having worked a lot with cities and in cities, you know, it's important to understand, I think, for the commission that there is a separation between staff and a governing body, particularly one where it's volunteer-based and they're meeting, you know, in some parts of Oregon once a month or twice a month. And I think that, you know, this is an issue. It's a thorny issue. Many cities struggle with this. And with this, you know, to be clear, you know, what am I really referring to? It's those individuals in a modern electronic age who claim to be media and don't fit within that media box. And as a state and as a state legislature, you know, there's been lots of debates as to what constitutes media, and we still haven't landed on an opinion or an answer. And so with all due respect to Commissioner Abbey, I would say, in my opinion, this individual would not constitute media for me. That being said, you know, I think there's certainly room for a difference of opinion here. And until we have an inflexible, clear, objective, unambiguous standard set forth in the law, I'm uncomfortable holding a city council accountable to it. With regard to the application, you know, I can see, you know, certainly, and again, I had some fingerprints on this, I could see where that, you know, might look like it's an intended barrier to entry. It's not. It's actually to get around that problem of somebody showing up at your executive session and saying, I'm media, you don't recognize them as media, and then how do you make that determination? Because it would not be a proper subject for executive session in and of itself. So the idea was to front load where there is a gray area or somebody that doesn't fit within the classic, you know, idea of media. The idea was to front load that issue up front. And I'm, one, willing to give the council and staff, you know, the benefit of the doubt. They weren't trying to play games here. Instead, they were really, truly, honestly trying to work through the issues. You know, I have spent a large part of my professional career on this issue. I've listened to every word of testimony back from the 1970s when Oregon was adopting its public meetings law, and with a particular eye towards what is media. The policy that was put together was put together. It wasn't just, you know, one individual. It was a group of local government attorneys from cities and counties. The newspaper association was invited in. I don't know if this body, if an invitation was made to this group. I certainly wasn't high enough on the food chain to have that much influence. But, you know, I think that, you know, to the extent that we've talked about a revisiting of that policy statewide for statewide associations to give guidance to its members, you know, I would hope that perhaps those associations would approach the commission staff. But, you know, until then, again, I just have a hard time, you know, holding folks accountable to a standard that the legislature itself, you know, hasn't sought to define or give us the authority to define in rules so that it's clear and unambiguous to those who are serving voluntarily our state, cities, and counties.
Okay, I'm next on the speaker list. I'll rely to you, Commissioner Mason, and you're already on the speaker list.
No, we have Commissioner Edwards, too.
Oh, and Commissioner Edwards. I'm not an attorney, and as to paraphrase a commercial, I don't even play one on TV. I have, however, been involved until recently in litigation that reminds me of this situation. The Secretary of State is charged with enforcing a statute whereby they accept candidates in accordance with a political party's bylaws, and that they can only nominate candidates in accordance with those bylaws. But there's another statute that says Secretary of State is not allowed to enforce party rules. That reminds me of this case quite a bit. And so the Secretary of State had a policy for a while that said, we'll accept whatever you get, whatever the chair of record gives us, without question, with regard to officer lists and bylaws. So I saw a lot of political parties that said they had bylaws. They showed a document that said bylaws, but they didn't have anything because they only existed at the pleasure of whoever the chair of record was. A chair of record could, and in a couple cases did, sit at his kitchen table, write new governing documents, hand it to the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State said, okay, we can't enforce party rules, so this is our policy. We accept it. Then the courts finally weighed in on this, and you know, it went all the way to the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals said, you are not allowed to interpret party rules, except as required by law. And by law, you have to determine if the certificates of nomination you receive were from, based on authentic bylaws and from authentic officers. So it's not a violation to determine the validity of those documents. That reminds me of this situation. There's a policy that Lincoln City has, but I think the weakness is that there was no application. There was no objective criteria or an attempt at an objective criteria. And so while I think they have a thing that they call an application or an application process, I don't think it really exists as such. And because it doesn't exist as such, I think it's our job to enforce the law. And so if there was an actual application process with a form that could be judged or rejected or accepted, then I would probably agree with Commissioner O'Day. But I think there's something that they call an application process, I don't think it really exists. I think it's just, we'll let you in if we want you to. And because of that, I'm going to, you know, with respect to the people in Lincoln City who I think are trying to do the right thing, and with respect to Commissioner O'Day, I'll be voting against this motion to dismiss. Forgive me, I don't know if Commissioner Edwards or our attorney is next.
I don't need to speak.
Commissioner Edwards?
I will be joining yourself and Commissioner Sosa in rejecting the motion to dismiss, and the reason why is because I believe that it would be an abdication of responsibility of this body at looking at specifically the executive session provision, and I'm not comfortable with that. I do hear the arguments also from lawyers, which I am not, and in my mind, how I hear this is very confusing about what is media, but it seems very simple to think of not having the ability to decide what is not media, and I think that feels very simple to me, and so I really appreciate the work that Commissioner Sosa did and the questions that he brought, because it really helped me understand, I think, the situation a lot more, and I appreciate the comments by our counsel as well. And I'm going to be joining our folks in not voting to dismiss.
Okay. Attorney Alpo?
I don't need to make a comment.
Okay. Am I pronouncing that right? Alpog.
No G in the end.
Okay, Alpog. Silent.
Alpog.
Okay. My apologies. Commissioner Mason.
Thank you, Chair. Five lawyers on this end of the table, and we're this confused after an hour and a half. I'm a simpleton of the bunch. I believe that if there was a violation, we should vote to hold them accountable. But it's too gray. I don't know how you can vote for a violation if it's this. You cannot determine whether this person is truly media, because that's the true gray spot for my interpretation of everything that's gone on. You break it down to the most simplistic form. This person, a member of the media, absolutely is a violation, but you can't say that. And so I would be supporting Commissioner O'Day and his motion.
Okay. Are there any other comments? Okay, there is a motion on the floor to dismiss this complaint. We'll go to a roll call vote.
Commissioner Key.
This is just on, we have to do these separately, right?
Yes, this is just on the first one. This is on, my apologies to make it clear, this is with respect to, I believe, Mr. Anderson, number 18.
And that was your intention?
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
I'm just going to make a comment before I vote. I actually believe this person is a member of the media, and my personal, if I were the attorney advising the commission, the counsel, I would have studied if he qualifies. That's not our role here. Mm-hmm. If I were a court, I would say that this policy violates procedural due process and strike it and say he should have been at least offered the opportunity. I'm voting aye on the motion to dismiss because I do not believe we have jurisdiction to make this decision, because there's nothing in state statute that defines what media is. So aye.
Commissioner Mason.
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day.
Aye.
Commissioner Sugar.
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa.
Nay.
Commissioner Starr.
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards.
Nay.
Commissioner Fiscom.
Aye.
Chair Burke.
Nay.
Motion passes 6-3.
Okay, very good. We go to the next item, and that would be the case of Mr. Don Williams, Mayor of the City of Lincoln City. Entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I would move that the Commission dismiss this complaint.
Okay, Commissioner O'Day moves to dismiss the complaint. Unless there is additional comment, we'll go to a vote. Okay.
Commissioner Fiscom?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sugar?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Nay.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
She stepped out.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And Chair Burke?
Nay.
Motion passes 7-2.
I'm sorry, 7-2 to 1?
No, 6-2.
6-2. 6-2 to 1, yeah. Okay, next, item 20, the case of Ms. Susan, Walkie?
Walkie.
Thank you. Counselor, City of Lincoln City.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I would move that the Commission dismiss this complaint.
Okay, Commissioner O'Day moves to dismiss the complaint. Unless there's discussion, proceed with a vote.
Commissioner Edwards?
Stepped out.
There we go again. Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sugar?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Nay.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Nay.
Motion passes 6-2.
Next item is number 21, the case of Ms. Judy Casper, Counselor, City of Lincoln City.
Mr. Chair, if I might, I move that the Commission dismiss the complaint.
Commissioner O'Day moves to dismiss the complaint. Unless there's additional discussion, we'll proceed with a vote.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sugar?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Nay.
Chair Burke?
Nay.
Motion passes
6-2. Okay, that brings us to item number 22, the case of Ms. Diana Hinton, Counselor, City of Lincoln City. The record will show that Commissioner Edwards has returned.
Mr. Chair, I move that we dismiss the complaint.
Commissioner O'Day moves to dismiss the complaint. Unless there's additional discussion, we'll proceed with a vote.
Commissioner Sosa?
Nay.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Nay.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sugar?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Nay.
Motion passes 6-3.
Okay, very good. The next item is number 23, the case of Riley Hoagland. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Counselor, City of Lincoln City.
Mr. Chair, I move that the Commission dismiss this complaint.
Okay, it has been so moved. Unless there's discussion, we'll proceed with a vote.
Commissioner Sugar?
Aye.
I'm sorry, nay.
Wait, no.
Which are we?
Motion to dismiss. Like overtime at the Saints game, right?
Getting tired. Ready for a break.
We need a bio break.
Mr. Starr?
Aye.
Mr. Edwards?
Nay.
Mr. Fiskum?
Aye.
Mr. Keene?
Aye.
Mr. Mason?
Aye.
Mr. O'Day?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Nay.
Motion passes 6-3.
Okay, I think we probably need a bio break pretty soon. Would anyone
need a break?
Would anyone object for a 10-minute break? Okay, disorder.